It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as we begin the program, just to remind you, don't hesitate to give them a call. Local number, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to find out more about the firm and the services provided at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So the topic today for our audience. Yeah.
Lockwood, let's shift into an area that we haven't talked about in a while. As you know, the purpose of our program, Wes and I try to kind of demystify, if you will, kind of explain and chart some different territory in the area of the legal world, which is always interesting and can at sometimes be rather complicated. One of the concepts that exist in the legal arena is the concept of a statute of limitation. And basically, this is a time period fixed by law, usually in statutory form, where it is determined that a case, an allegation of wrongdoing, a breach of a contract, whatever the facts might be, it can be any set of facts, that they must be brought before the court and before the jurisdiction within a certain period of time. Maybe it's 1 year, maybe it's 3 years, maybe it's 6 months. The bottom line is that if you do not, as someone who is pursuing a cause of action, bring the action before the court within this particular period of time, then you are barred from bringing the action at all. Now, that's the law, and that's pretty straightforward. We're going to talk about some details here in a moment, but our listeners might be wondering, well, what's the purpose of this? Why in the world would we put a limit, a time limit of all things, on anyone bringing forth a cause of action? Mm-hmm. And the answer to that question is that the courts through the years, of course, Lockwood, recognize that the memories of witnesses fade. Mm-hmm. Documents sometimes cannot be located after a certain period of time. Facts and circumstances can change, the topography of land, the ability for there to be photographs or for there to be expert witnesses. Again, information might fade, if you will. It might not be as fresh. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, the courts require that the parties honor the statute of limitations and bring their cases within the certain particular periods of time so that the facts, the circumstances, the witnesses, the physical circumstances of real property and the damages that have occurred in a construction matter or in a hurricane or whatever the case might be, the fire, are more prevalent and more vivid than they would be, after 10 years or 15 years or just no limitation whatsoever. And so we live and die by these statutes of limitations, don't we, Wes?
Yeah, no question about that. That's one of the first things that we look at, obviously, when a client comes in or a potential client comes in with a claim. Doesn't matter what kind of claim it is, whether it's insurance hasn't paid like they should on Hurricane Florence. We had a lot of that.
Right.
We still are dealing with some of that. Whether it's a construction case, whether it's a lien case, we're asking questions right from the beginning about, when did this take place? When did that take place? When did you first notice there was a problem with the house, the construction? And, and the reason we're asking that is because we're very akin to the statute of limitations and know that in the event that it was too long ago, then there's not going to be much we can do, you know, for that potential client.
You know, that raises a question. Obviously, it's on the part of the plaintiff in this case, the need to make documentation of when something, when they first, for example, notice something out of place, not being done correctly, or is there a period of time after which an action is taken that then the, in this case, the plaintiff or the client can make note of the situation? I mentioned construction. If you start wondering about the construction as the house is being built or the building is being built, then do you make the notice then, or is it after the acceptance of the job? I guess is the best description.
Well, I'm not sure if I'm following that completely, but let me kind of back into that just a little bit as far as the way that question was asked there, Lockwood.
Okay.
So the statute of limitations with regard to construction issues is really two things. It's a statute of repose, which is a hard and fast period of time of 6 years, okay? And that would be 6 years from the date that the certificate of occupancy was issued.
Okay.
So, you know, if you're 7 years out and there's some significant issues that you are now recognizing or that you are now wanting to do something about legally with regard to some construction, 7 years from the CO being issued, then mm-hmm. it's very likely, there are some exceptions, but it's very likely that it's too late.
Okay.
So basically the idea there is that, you know, if there are significant issues that would require legal action against, you know, the person, the business that is responsible for building the house, we're talking about a house, could be any kind of construction, then, you know, that's something you should have noticed in the first 6 years.
Okay.
Okay, so there's that. And then the other statute that applies would be a statute of limitations. And that would be a 3-year statute from the date that you knew or should have known of
okay.
the issue.
All right.
Like, for example, let's say it's the roofing was installed improperly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when are you first going to notice that? Probably when the house starts to leak.
Right.
And so, you know, that issue is kind of like, okay, you've got one leak in one part of the house within the first, you know, let's say, you know, not going to break it down in time, but a certain point in time, would that lead you to believe within reason that mm-hmm. the entire roof is bad?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, maybe not. That's more of a jury question. But so, you know, kind of backing into that question, I always, of course, am asking questions in this context about, did you complain about this? Did you write an email to the builder? Did you write a letter to the builder? Did you text the builder about this problem? Because that's going to set pretty much in stone when you first knew of the issue. Okay? And if there's documentation as to when you knew of the issue, if that documentation, whether it's an email, text, letter, whatever it may be, is more than 3 years ago, that may be a problem in the case.
Mm-hmm.
Or is this something that you know, just recognized? I mean, we have situations, you know, fairly frequently. I mean, I wouldn't say every week, but fairly frequently that, you know, there's some very significant issues with construction that is not learned about till later on. For example, let's say that we've got, you know, an area of a house where there's a leak that appears, you know, and maybe we're having the windows taken out there and replaced or reset, and then, my goodness, when we take that out, we find out the entire side of the house is rotten, okay, because there is a for example, lack of flashing. There was no flashing put in a particular area of the house, and it was allowing water to get in the wall for the past however many years, and this $5,000 repair relative to what we thought was a window issue now is a $200,000 replacement of, you know, one side of the house, basically. Well, go to your insurance company with that, and they're going to deny that claim. They're not going to pay on that because, you know, the hazard insurance, your typical hazard insurance for construction-related matters is not going to cover faulty workmanship, not going to cover faulty, you know, even if the windows are faulty. It could mm-hmm. be a product issue and not an installation issue. It could be, you know, something relating to a particular product. It's more likely in the construction world when you have something like that, not a product issue. It's more of an installation issue normally. But again, you're not going to have that insurance. So because they don't cover that, hazard insurance on your home is designed to deal with fires, you know, and hurricane wind damage, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Not a contractor's, you know, responsibility to, you know, construct the home to a workmanlike standard. So then that leaves you with what? Okay, well, I've got to either come out of pocket for the $200,000 repair, or I need to look to who is responsible for doing this work, and then that brings us to the statute of limitations. When did you first learn of this issue? When was the CO issued? You know, are we within the 3-year? Are we within the 6-year? If we are, then, you know, potentially we have a valid claim depending on, you know, obviously things like expert opinions, what was the true cause of this problem, you know, those type things. But again, if we're not within the 3-year or 6-year statutes that apply, then as I often say, we don't even get off the runway.
We're talking with Wes Collins and then Cecil Harvell, and that's Wes right just a moment ago talking about the issue of statute of limitations here on Let's Talk Legal. And again, remind you, give them a call if you have any questions about this conversation or others we've had. 252 area code 726-9050. That's at harvellandcollins.com, by the way. All right, Wes, I go back to that question, and you actually answered it, because I was wondering, if you don't notice the circumstances of it, but you do discover it several years later, then obviously you have to prove that it was faulty construction at the beginning. Does that still allow you the opportunity to contest the construction now 5 years later when you suddenly discover this, as you were just mentioning, putting in new windows or something of this nature? Is there some form of allowance in that case?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're within 6 years of the certificate of occupancy
okay.
being issued and you just discovered the issue, then you're fine because the discovery time frame starts the 3 years. Now, that doesn't extend the 6 years, though.
Okay.
So if you're at year five and you discover I've got a completely side of my house completely rotten, well, and you can't wait another 3 years if you've got the statute of repose, you know, that's going to expire in 1 year because you're at 5 years, you go one more year, you're at six. So mm-hmm. that makes sense. So, yeah, no question about that. And then you mentioned at the beginning of that question proving what this is about. Now, in just about every construction case that I've dealt with, there is always a lot of pointing of fingers.
Right.
Okay. If there is, you know, if there's rot in a house, and those are the ones that really become more significant, you know, the ones where that become more expensive, because a lot of times when you have, you know, you have the moisture in the walls, for example, well, a lot of times the moisture in the walls is also going to attract termites,
mm-hmm.
okay, because termites like a moist area. So a lot of times we have very extensive damage that we find once we start opening these walls, kind of the nature of where we live. I mean, obviously, we have a moist area. We have storms. Mm-hmm. We have openings, you know, in homes that are created because of, you know, wind-driven rain, you know, these type of things. So, but we have to prove it. Just because you have an issue in your home with regard to, you know, rotten wall, rotten sidewall, rotten gable end of the home, whatever it may be, then that doesn't mean that there was liability. It could be liability relative to the general contractor or the builder. You know, it could be a situation where everything was basically done correctly and water still got into the home. That's right. That's possible. It could be, you know, a situation where there was a failure to maintain the property. That could be something that the contractor says, well, you know, we recommend that you re-caulk your home every X amount of years, and you didn't do that, so there's some responsibility mm-hmm. there for you. But normally, when we find extensive damage, as far as you know, water infiltration, it's normally something we can identify, like, you know, like I said before, the complete lack of flashing.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's like an angle somewhere where there's a dormer or something, and it wasn't installed properly. Those kind of things where you've got water getting in and it trickling down behind the siding, and that's something you can't see. And then, you know, after a period of time, then there is there's some evidence of it somehow. You know, whether you're seeing some staining on your walls, whether you're smelling something that doesn't smell right,
right,
you know, whatever it may be, and then, you know, you investigate with regard to it, and you find out, oh my gosh, the whole side of the house is about to fall in.
Right.
You know, but you have to prove it. That's right. And when I say, you know, that there's pointing of fingers, you know, you've got to have expert witnesses examine the property,
mm-hmm.
look at the property, make a determination as to what the problem is. Don't want to be in a situation where you take out the problem and fix it and then notify the other side, the contractor, and say, look, you messed up my home. It cost me $200,000. You know, you owe me this money. By the way, it's all fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the contractor's going to say, well, you didn't even give me an opportunity to look at it.
The evidence is gone.
Yeah. The evidence is gone.
Yeah.
That's called spoliation of evidence.
Okay.
And if you do that, then if the case goes forward and there's a trial, then the defense is going to have a spoliation defense that the jury will be read to them, that you can take into consideration the fact that the plaintiff, you know, destroyed evidence prior to the defendant having an opportunity to inspect, and that's not going to bode well for your case.
All right, so the statute of limitations, of course, is a time issue, but in that process, timing for research on the evidence. And Cecil, of course, you mentioned the fact that in many instances you have cases where the evidence due to age and time has altered. So there's the reason for the statute of limitations. Real quick question. Do the statutes of limitations change based on the kind of case that it is?
Yes. Yes, they do. We've spoken this morning quite a bit about construction law
right.
Litigation. There can be personal injury, like an automobile accident litigation. There can be malpractice, as in, you know, medical malpractice,
mm-hmm.
allegations of the breach of the standard of care by a physician. There can be statutes relative to estate matters, okay? The statute to file for an elective share, which is, of course, a technical word, but we've discussed that some on the program. There can be statutes of limitations as to when one can challenge a will. It just is an endless set of substantive law areas,
mm-hmm.
and each particular substantive law area, as one would say in law school, we're not going to make it easy for you lawyers. Each particular substantive area has its own specific statutes of limitations that need to be looked at. Now, with that said, and I'll let Wes kind of affirm this, and I don't really want to say a general area, because they really do vary. I think what our listeners need to hear from us this morning is that you know, if you have any legal matter whatsoever, that you any conflict or any legal matter whatsoever that you feel that you might have to take some sort of action, you are encouraged to seek legal advice sooner rather than later. The sooner you get those facts and circumstances before a court, the better you're going to be. And of course, you just can't wait several years. There are it's complicated, Lockwood. There also are certain cases with the filing of a lawsuit. There has to be an affidavit, if you will, or affirmation by a certain expert that they feel that in their expert opinion that there are sufficient allegations of negligence. And so, you know, this has to be obtained before one can set forth the lawsuit.
We're talking about statute of limitations. That was Cecil Harvell with Harvell and Collins, and Wes Collins joining us as well. And Wes was talking about the issue of construction. I just want to remind folks, as you just heard a moment ago, if you have questions, don't hesitate to give a call. And I'm going to get to that in a moment. That number, by the way, 252 area code 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, Wes, you know, you made an interesting point there, Cecil. I have a concern. I'm not sure what it is. I go to your office, and Wes, as you said a moment ago, the first thing you're going to do is look at the concern and then determine under what statute it would apply, and then what are the statute of limitations for this particular case. The question then goes to, you know, when do you, if you will, conclude that statute of limitations? In other words, is it a matter of when it is filed at the courthouse as a case, or two questions: when does the clock start, and when do you sort of put a stop to that clock so that you can pursue the case?
Right.
Does that make sense, by the way?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first issue is it's when the claim accrued in almost any situation. Okay, and what that means is it accrues when you have a right to bring the claim.
Okay.
The easiest way to identify that would be in a personal injury case like a motor vehicle accident. So those are obviously cases where, you know, there's really not much of a question or any question at all as to when the statute or the case accrued.
Mm-hmm.
It's when the accident took place.
Right.
Okay, boom, that's that. So we have 3 years from the date of the accident in order to then stop the statute of limitations with filing of the lawsuit, filing of the summons and complaint. That's when you've covered it. And I have clients ask me sometimes, I have clients ask me sometimes that even after we filed and we've been maybe dealing with the case for a year or so, and even though maybe we filed early and the statute of limitations hasn't even run yet, they've asked me the question, well, what about after the 3 years that runs next month?
Right.
Are we okay? Well, no, we filed this a year ago, so we're great.
Okay.
Now, a couple other moving parts with regard to that. In North Carolina, particularly in state court, this is not in federal court, but in state court, if you choose to dismiss your case under what's called Rule 41, you can do that once voluntarily, and you can refile that case within 1 year, even if the statute of limitations has run.
Okay.
Circumstances sometimes dictate that. It may be that a party is sick, has got an illness, and can't really deal with the litigation right now. It's just too much, or whatever it may be. The family issue, something like that. It could be something where we have a problem with a primary witness. Let's say that one of our expert witnesses is having problems, and we're needing to develop the case, but this expert witness is not someone who's kind of coming through for us. Maybe they've fallen apart on us. Maybe we need to regroup, and maybe we've got a trial date coming up, and we want to dismiss the case and then refile it within a year. The only risk with regard to that, there may be more than just one, but one that's absolute, is that if you do that and then you refile, then the defendant has the right to seek and have you pay their cost that were incurred in the first case. Now, that's not attorney's fees. It's more like things like the cost of a deposition,
right,
filing fees. It's usually not all that high. It could be travel expenses under certain circumstances. But that can stretch the statute of limitations, so to speak, for 1 year, even after the statute has already run, if you filed it originally within the statute of limitations. So that's kind of getting in the weeds a little bit for purposes of us, you know, speaking on the radio program here. But still, that's an important tool that good litigation attorneys, you know, are aware of, but not available in federal court.
Okay.
You can't do that in federal court. Once you filed, if you dismiss, then it is in federal court, then it is with prejudice in just about every circumstance.
Okay.
You know, the way to buy more time in federal court probably would be like a motion to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we need to stay this case because we're still, you know, we're still waiting for, let's say, the appraisal process
right
to complete in the context of an insurance case. So we can't go forward until we know what the appraisal process, you know, returns, that kind of thing. So that's a nuance in the statute of limitations.
All right, we're about to wrap things up with you, and we've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here, and we're talking about statute of limitations. Real quick question for you, Wes, on the issue, or Cecil, on the issue of the length of the court case. Of course, you filed it, you've got the summons and complaint, you've done that within the 3-year time frame, but can a case be continued so long that it outlasts its statute, I guess is the best description. Is it conceivable that it can be stretched beyond reason?
Well, a couple things about that. I mean, once you're filed, if you are filed and your summons and complaint has been served and everything served properly, then you're good on the statute of limitations.
Okay.
Now, if you fail to prosecute a case, I mean, if you just don't move it forward, you don't do anything, you run the risk of a summary judgment motion being filed against you that would be potentially, you know, if you don't have the evidence to support your case, then defendant can move for summary judgment with their own affidavits and try to get it dismissed. And under certain circumstances, the court can dismiss the case for failure to prosecute the case.
Okay.
I mean, you can't just abuse the legal process by filing a case, not doing anything with it, you know, for purposes of basically aggravating and frustrating the defendant. You've got to move your case, you know, forward, even though, you know, really, as we say, you know, the law moves very slowly.
Right.
It really does in the world of litigation. There's no doubt about it. It's a very slow process.
As you've pointed out many times before, the fact that, well, case in point, and we won't get into today, but the difference between North Carolina court and federal court, and the fact that so much of what your time is invested in at the federal level is dependent upon the court itself. You have so little control over that, as you've described in the past. So, yeah, it does. What's the term? It grinds finely, it grinds slow, but it grinds finely, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's right. You were definitely listening when we were talking about that. Yeah, I feel like I have more control with the state court cases. There's more communication.
Right.
It's a little less formal. In many cases, you know, you're going to have some email communications with the trial court administrator, with the court, so you have a little bit more information about what actually human to human being is
right
going on,
right?
And with the federal court, in many cases, everything is driven by the electronic filing site and motions and briefs and things like that.
Real quick question before, as we wrap it up with you, Wes, and again, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell with us, with Harvell and Collins. Are the statute of limitations different in federal cases than state cases?
There are certain federal statute limitations if you're proceeding under like a federal statute.
Okay.
Like your harm is based on some breach of a federal statute.
Okay.
But typically, your statute of limitations are going to be the same as for particular claims. Like if you had a negligence claim that ended up in federal court, let's say that it ended up in federal court because there was a federal question. I mean, mm-hmm. let's say that it was someone driving a federal vehicle that you were
right.
In an accident with, and potentially that would get removed to federal court. It's still going to be a 3-year statute of limitations.
Okay. I wondered about that. All right. Wrapping things up, and that's Wes Collins of Harvell & Collins and Cecil Harvell with us this afternoon as well here on Let's Talk Legal. And again, I remind you that number, 252 area code 726-9050. And as Cecil suggested, if you have questions, don't delay. Make that phone call, 252 area code 726-9050, and go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com.